The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
It's time for the Thursday interview. My next guest is currently starring in 222, A Ghost Story in the Olympia Theatre. You may recognise her as Whitney from EastEnders. Shona McGarty, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Slightly disappointed to see that you didn't come with a handful of nuts.
Handful of nuts?
I read that you said that the one piece of advice that you were given from your 16 years of experience in EastEnders that lasted with you was always travel with a handful of nuts.
That's
and
true.
I expected that you would deliver on that, and there's no sign of them.
That's true. Well, June Brown, who played Doc Cotton, she's passed away now, God bless her, but she said, although she smoked about 80 fags a day, God bless her, she said that the one thing that keeps her alive was a handful of nuts a day. And she was 93 when she died.
And working till 91, wasn't she? There's something in the theory.
So next time I'll bring a handful of nuts, okay?
While we're on advice that you got from EastEnders, I believe the other piece of good advice that you got was from Barbara Windsor, which again proved to be very true because she suggested about how rigorously punctual you had to be for the gig, and you got 16 years out of the gig.
Yeah. Yeah, she told me off once.
Literally told you off?
Literally, yeah. She took me into a room. I was late. I was young. Forgive me. And I only live around the corner, which makes it worse. She dragged me into a room and she said, "Listen, darling." I said, "Oh, what?" And she said, "Look, if you want this job, right, it's an opportunity that's it's never going to come again." She said, "If you want this job, you've got to be on time." And I said, "Okay." And she had a massive go at me, but it worked. I was scared for my life.
What age were you at the time? Because you started in EastEnders when you were very young.
I was 15. When she told me off, I was 16.
What's it like having of all people, if it was somebody else in the cast, you say, "Yeah, okay, fine, I have to take it on board." But Barbara Windsor giving you a dressing down.
Yeah, it was iconic. It's brilliant.
You also started with some extraordinarily challenging storylines. Like, you started with stuff that had complaints lighting up the switchboard and making the front pages the next day. Was that nice as an actress starting in a role, or
it was
difficult?
Strange because it was my first proper job, my proper TV job, and my first on-screen kiss was with a man who was in his 40s, and he was uncomfortable with it too, and I just knew the importance of the storyline, you know, the whole paedophilia storyline. It was very important to people, and I knew that I had to take it on. I felt responsible, and I was comfortable because Chris, who was playing Tony, Whitney's stepdad, was such a lovely guy, and we had long chats about it, and obviously my parents were there, and we were all very safe and
A lot of pressure, though. Because the build-up to it and all that goes with it, must have been very tricky.
Yeah, I remember actually listening to the radio on the way into work the next day when the episode had aired and you saw Tony kissing Whitney. Everyone was going mad about it. And I couldn't believe, you know, I thought, God, that's me. That's, you know, wow. To be part of such an important storyline was really amazing. I was really honoured.
What effect does that level of publicity have on your life outside of work then? Because you would have gone from schoolgirl. I mean, you had done musical theatre and had some success to that point. But there's EastEnders lead actress success. And that's does the world change totally?
Well, the producers told us that, you know, your life will change overnight. And we thought, yeah, whatever. And literally the next day I was walking through the high street with my mum. And a girl was staring at me. And I said to Mum, "Have I got something on my face?" Or is there something on me? And she went, "You're on the telly. She recognises you." And I said, "Oh, yeah." So I said, "Oh, hi, how are you?" She was like, "Oh, you're on EastEnders." And I said, "Oh, yeah, hello." And it literally, my life changed overnight. And I guess because you're in people's front rooms every night of the week.
So. Well, not just every night of the week. You crossed, I think it was 2019, you crossed the 1,000 episode threshold.
Yeah.
So you must have done what? Did you get to 1,500 before it was over? Like, that's an extraordinary amount of time in people's living rooms,
day in,
day out.
I think I did. I had over 100, as we call them, duff-duffs, which is, you know.
Duff, duff, duff.
Exactly. So,
the cast genuinely call them duff-duffs?
We call them duff-duffs, yeah. I remember you'd always be so excited if you looked to the last page and you'd see it would say fade out. That's what we call it. And it was if you were the last scene of the episode, you'd get a duff-duff.
Oh, so it's not just being in the episode that counts as a Duff Duff. You have to be the last thing that leads to the Duff Duff.
The last thing, yeah.
How many Duff Duffs did you say you got in total then?
Over 100.
That's not bad going.
That's good, isn't it?
So what's it like to leave that then? Because there are few gigs in the acting world where you can get it as a regular working job for years or for decades as you did. I imagine on the one hand, that's great and it's reliable income. On the other hand, it takes away a lot of variety of other characters that you might be able to play.
Yeah, I mean, being in a show like EastEnders, I mean, the contract is so strict. Everyone knows that across the industry. Like, EastEnders is very strict. You can't do anything else. You can't promote anything else. You can't even, if you had a T-shirt on it that had a logo, you'd have to be very careful because you can't be seen to endorse another brand or product.
Really? Outside? So when you're walking around in public, you can't decide, this is my moment to emblazon myself in Gucci or whatever it might be?
Yeah, you can't. You just can't. And if you're on a red carpet, you can't say who designed your dress or who did this or whatever. You just can't. So you kind of feel like they've got you by the short and curlies. So now I feel very free. I can do what I like.
Imagine it's a relief.
Yeah.
What then about the going into doing theatre? Because you're now in 222, a ghost story, which has gotten fabulous reviews, which is a nice position to be in. You're in the Olympiad through until mid-August. But it's the first, I assume, access to a live audience you've had since you were a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, I did Panto last year at Christmas, which is very different to EastEnders and very different to 222. It's very nerve-wracking because it's live. And if I make a mistake, I can't swear and do it again. It's a live audience. And yeah, I was pretty anxious at the beginning, actually. Going on stage is a completely different way of acting as well.
Because had you done much of that before EastEnders? You probably can't have been because of your youth. You can't have done much theatre.
No, not really. I did a bit of musical theatre when I was really young, but yeah. I do get the urge to burst into song during this ghost story, but I'm not allowed, apparently.
That's the other thing. Not wishing to be condescending, you can sing.
Oh, thank you.
This is not just me saying it. You've done a number of big BBC and other shows. Is that also, I imagine, high pressure? Because if you're coming out to an audience that knows you as Whitney, there's a sort of an expectation of, all right, let's see if she can actually deliver.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure. There is a lot of pressure. I mean, sometimes people in the industry say, oh, look, it's an actress trying to be a singer or a singer trying to be an actress, which is really, you know, who cares? Like, I mean, I'm not trying to be a singer. I just like to sing. And
yeah, I was intrigued though that in some of the appearances you made, you went for those the low hanging easy fruit like Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, I do like a ballad. Yeah, I do. But I've been really, really honoured to have sang for like The King and, you know, and some amazing people. Like,
when did you sing for The King?
I sang, I think it was 2 years ago at the Royal Remembrance Festival, in front of The King and.
Was he visible to you or was he in the darkness?
Yeah, I've met him a few times.
When you are singing for the king, do you check the king's reaction or do you just try to say, I'll zone him out and deliver on the performance?
I tried to zone him out. I mean, yeah, I was very nervous that day.
I cut across you. You said you've sung for the king and a number of other people. Who's in the same bailiwick as the king then in terms of stress to sing for?
I have sang with Daniel O'Donnell, I think you'll find.
No. Well, set the king aside.
He is the king.
You have sang not in front of, but with Daniel O'Donnell.
I have indeed.
When?
It was a few years ago now. It was my friend Brian Connolly. He played Rocky in EastEnders. And we were listening to some of Daniel's music. And I said, oh, I love Daniel. And I grew up listening to his music. And he said, oh, well, let me speak to Gloria Hunningford and I'll see if we can hook you up. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah, I'll give him a ring. So anyway, next thing, I'm sitting at home with a cup of tea, chatting away to Mum, telling her about the conversation I'd had with Brian and about Gloria. And my phone rings and it's Daniel O'Donnell on a FaceTime. And he says, hiya, Shauna. Would you like to sing a song with me in my next show? And I just couldn't speak. I said yes, obviously, and I sang in his show.
I have some questions. How did Gloria Hunningford get in the middle of all of this?
Well, she hooked us up.
No, you say that like that's logical. Like, oh, I want to call Daniel O'Donnell. Where do I go? I'll start with Gloria Hunningford and see from there. But you knew the significance, I assume, of Daniel O'Donnell by virtue of being essentially an Irish woman.
Yeah, I mean, my family...
There's a lot of Irish lineage in there.
My family are Irish descent. So, well, I'm Irish descent. My grandparents were Limerick, Leitrim, Wexford and Tip.
Oh, so the full spectrum, all four are...
Yeah.
Ah, right.
Yeah, so we grew up listening to Daniel and, yeah, it was just amazing. I've always wanted to sing with him. My grandparents loved him, so, yeah.
When you're dealing with him in the green room and backstage, does he just swear like a docker? Is there... does the mask ever fall?
Do you know, I was hoping that it would, but he's just... he's like an angel. And he speaks like an angel. And I probably shouldn't say this, but when he was on stage and I was waiting to go on, I fell asleep. Because his voice just put me to sleep.
This explains the years of chart-topping success that
he
has had.
Right?
So go back. We were talking about the shift from going from TV gigs into theatre. You talked about that sort of first night pressure of live audience and the expectation of it's Whitney off EastEnders in an entirely different role. What was night one of 222 like then?
I was expecting to be heckled or people shouting out, you know, Ricky or Bianca, get out my pub and things like that. But that didn't happen, which, you know, I'm really grateful for. Thanks, audience. Because that usually happens.
Does it? That's what you get in the, you get out my pub in the street.
All the time, yeah. And sometimes I join in. It's just fun. But the first night was really nerve-wracking. Yeah, like I said, having a live audience is a completely different feeling. Keeps you on your toes.
It must be cool, though, because you and I were talking before the, we started formally, and that thing of doing a run where you've got the difference between a Tuesday night audience and a Friday night audience, matinee versus evening, you must have to play to the crowd differently while still staying within the confines of the story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can tell what day of the week it is by how loud they are. I mean, if it's a Saturday night, you're going to have a completely different reaction to a Tuesday. The audience have been brilliant and they laugh at different times and they jump at different times.
I'm told they do actually jump. The guys went to it and said that there are bits of this where there are moments of...
Oh, yeah. There's literal gasps in the audience. They're like, someone went, Jesus, the other night, which was brilliant. And I've been... I'm just going to say it. I don't care. The directors don't know and the producers don't know, but I have been... In one scene, I've had a drink and my character, Jenny, gets scared. So she jumps. And as I jump, I've been throwing the liquid at the audience just for another jump scare.
So the plot line of 222, as I understand it, is there is a woman in a house that she is refurbishing and she believes it's haunted because she hears, is it ghosts coming through the baby monitor at in the middle of the night?
Yeah, footsteps. At 2:22 every night for the last four nights.
So she then decides to investigate how?
So she tells her husband, Sam, who is very intelligent and has a scientific reason for everything. He doesn't believe her. His friend, Lauren, doesn't believe her either. But Lauren, who's played by Laura Whitmore, Lauren's boyfriend, Ben, is a believer. So there's team believe and there's team non-believe. And they decide to do a seance in the house and it all kicks off.
And from there on, you can't tell us anything else because I believe it's one of those that ends with warnings to the audience, please do the decent thing and don't tell anybody where this goes.
Exactly.
Well, the run is on through until mid-August, I think it's August 16th. It is 2:22. It is in the Olympia Theatre if you want to go and see it. What's the difference between having something like a, 90-minute-ish play where once you've learned the lines, they're the lines. And knowing that 1,000 or 1,500 times you're going to get handed a script and have to digest it and regurgitate it in what? A day? 2 days? Like, how long would you get to learn new scenes when you're doing EastEnders?
Oh, we'd literally do a scene in 20 minutes. So you'd get the script and you'd probably have maybe 2 days to learn as many scenes as you could. And we'd be jumping from different episodes all the time. So we'd be shooting it out of order as well. So your brain would just be all over the place. And then once you do the scene, you have to tell your brain to forget about that now because we're moving on. So So that's what I've been struggling with, is remembering all these lines. I mean, there's like 150 pages of this play. And when I got the script, I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. And I know it inside out.
And is there, did you develop a trick to how you do it? Or is it simply just the hard yards of repeat and repeat and repeat?
My fella David's just been amazing. He helps me with every script I get, and he just plays all the parts. So
so you just make him do the table reads with you until eventually all the run time. Lines?
Until eventually it just goes in. Yeah.
For the EastEnders experience on the memory front, I was trying to figure out a way, was it possible to synopsize the experiences that Whitney had through her time on EastEnders? Mm-hmm. I thought nobody could say on top of all this. Can you actually remember her personal narrative and all that happened to her?
I think I could give it a go.
Could you?
I think so.
From start to finish, from...
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I think so.
Okay, give us a shot.
Okay. So, 2008, Whitney was homeless with Bianca and the kids on the street, stayed in a bus shelter because she had nowhere to go, arrived on the square, found out her nan was Pat Butcher, and then...
I'm going to make notes. Yeah, go on.
Okay. And then she... the secret was revealed that she was having an affair with her stepdad, which she didn't realise was abuse. So that was the paedophile storyline.
Which was the big, huge one we talked about earlier.
Yep. And then she had a boyfriend, Peter Beale, who her stepdad, Tony, beat up because he was jealous.
And we're only up to 2010.
I know.
You have another 9 years.
I know. How long have we got? And then she's been trafficked. She's been raped. She's been... Janine made her a prostitute to make money. What else happened? God, there's loads. She found out that her boyfriend was actually her abusive stepdad's son. She then stabbed him in the kitchen.
As you do.
As you do. Self-defense.
Indeed.
She was found not guilty.
Self-defense.
Yeah. But then she did go to prison for a little while. Hallucinated because she went on a hunger strike.
Became 12.
Became 12 again, saw herself, come to terms with the abuse. And then what else happened? Oh, yeah. She was going out with a serial killer who killed his wife by pushing her on a dishwasher with a knife turning up the wrong way. She then went to get revenge, hung him off a bridge.
As you do.
Oh, and then she ran Cat over in the car. She meant to get Ben, but she ran Cat over.
I like the way you put that in more or less the same kind of spectrum as tried to murder serial killer, also killed Cat.
Yeah, she also got chlamydia one time. Yeah, not that you want to know that. Well, that's what happened.
Final thing then, when all of this is brought to you as the actress, do you ever go, ah lads, ah come on, there's limits?
I was pretty proud of all the storylines only because I thought, well, this is going to be like, this character is historic for being the most tragic, like downtrodden character. I don't know if there's any other soap character that's had so much happen to them. I'd be intrigued to find out.
Yeah, given the arc that you've just laid out there, I would think there are precious few who have that many duff-duffs.
Yeah. Thank you. And I've never got an award before. So if there's an award for the most tragic character...
If you have an award that you would like to give to Shoni, you can send it in to News Talk, Texas 53106. We'll collect it at reception. Or you can go to the Olympia, where she is starring in 222, A Ghost Story. And as I say, the guys from the team went and said that it was highly entertaining and rewardingly scary. Shoni, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.